So don't be shy about talking to your neighbor about this quiz.
Okay, so you just draw the vectors that
then the value is going to be pushed away from the origin, and if less than One with the lower eigenvalue, the greater eigenvalue is going to start, the odds are going to start like, kind of following along the lower eigenvalue. Because I basically just drew a linear vector on negative. I mean,
So the thing is that with the lambda equals one, there wouldn't be traveling.
It would be like a chain link.
There would be traveling. So it would start off traveling along angles one, right? Away from the orbit, and then it would slowly kind of go parallel to lambda equals
three.
That's my interpretation.
As long as this equation is satisfied.
Okay.
Okay, so I think most of you have gotten pretty far on this problem. This is actually an easy problem. You see, I scratched out the original because I had an X there, and that made it really hard. So I thought, in fact, it makes it, I don't know if it makes it complex, but it certainly has some weird answers. When I wrote it down, I didn't think it was going to have that kind of behavior. So, but when I worked it, it's like, uh-oh, this is not going to be a good quiz. So, so that's why I scratched it out and put that Y in there. Instead of the X. And here's the solution. So this is the original differential equation when you write it in matrix form. And your matrix form should look something like this. Or if you have an A here, define A to be this matrix. And then we're finding the determinant of A minus lambda I. This gives rise to something called a characteristic polynomial. You may have seen that term in the textbook. And I'm taking the determinant of this matrix, and when you do that, you get your lambda equal 3 and 1, and you can read that off directly from the matrix. So, nothing hard about that. And then, if your lambda is 3, then you plug that into here. You don't I mean, you have to use this matrix. Lambda equals 3 gives you this for your A minus lambda I, and now you solve it for V, and so 0 times V1, V1 can be anything, plus 1 times V2, and this has to equal 0, so V2 must be 0. So you don't have any choice about this 0 here. But we can make this anything we want. An easy thing to do is just to make it a 1. And then if lambda is equal to 1, then 3 minus 1 is 2. You get a 1, 0, and then 1 minus 1 is 0. So that's how we get this matrix. And then solve for V1, V2. And you can't use the bottom equation because that will give you a trivial solution. But... it's underdetermined. It just doesn't give you enough information to figure out what the relationship is between V1 and V2. And so, but we use this top equation. So 2 times V1 plus 1 times V2 is equal to 0. And however you can satisfy this equation is fine, but it's easy if you use some easy numbers. So I usually solve for one of the variables in terms of the other. And here, so V2 is equal to negative 2V1. Let V1 equal 1, so then V2 is negative 2. And then, of course, you can write the general solution. Now, I've been a little vague about the phase portrait for this kind of problem because, you know, it's easy if one of them if one of the eigenvalues is negative and the other one's positive, you're going to get a saddle, and we can draw saddles all day long. Those are easy. But the phase portrait for something that has both lambdas being the same sign, either both negative or both positive, is a little trickier. So I wanted to spend a little bit of time on that today. And so first thing you do is you plot your V-vec. By the way, is there any question about any of this here? You guys all got this on your quiz, right? Because you're going to hand in the quiz, and I'm going to give you, assuming that you have all of this information on there, I'll give you 10 out of 10. Right? So, by the way, I do that partly to reward those people who show up on time, right? I think we're still missing 3 people today. So good job, guys. You're here. Sometimes, like Woody Allen says, you know, he has his own problems. But one of the things he said that I live by kind of is, you know, 80% of success is showing up. So if you can just be here when you're supposed to be here, you probably are going to do okay. So.
Attendance for 80% of the class?
That's not exactly.
I think I know what you're trying to do there.
You live by it.
Well, I do. So the other 20% is just worth more. See how I weaseled out of that one? So, you know, it's a weighted average kind of thing. So, so what we want to do here is plot the phase portrait. So, first thing you do is you plot these vectors. So, 1, 0. So, x is 1, y is 0. So, it's going off like this. And you're going to have, because you're going away from the equilibrium, you're going to have a corresponding vector that's over here. And then your other vector, v, is 1, negative 2. So let's say over 1, down 2. So that vector, and then in the opposite direction, something like that. So... and then record the lambdas. So this one is lambda equals 3, and this is lambda equals 1. Okay. Now, the equilibrium is 0, 0. It's the origin. So all curves must go through the origin. at some point. In this case, they're all going to radiate away from the origin. So you can't just have, you know, a curve that maybe, let's see, so this is going to go, they're both going outward. Right, so it's not going to just go outward and then kind of go off this way. And if I led you to believe that before, think about what happens when you travel backward in time far enough. Maybe this is your initial condition, but if you travel backward in time, you actually need to end up at the origin. But it's worse than that, because what's going to happen is you're going to rapidly approach that the line for your lambda equal 1. And so ultimately, the solution is going to propagate out parallel to the dominant eigenvalue. So in this case, the dominant eigenvalue is 3. After even just a few seconds, the lambda equal 1 is just totally swamped by the lambda equals 3, because we're talking about exponential. E to the 3t is a lot more powerful function than e to the 1t. Okay, so if you happen to be on this side, then you're going to be tangential or asymptotically approaching or whatever, but it's going to quickly turn out and go this way. And if your initial condition is there, let's say, what's going to happen is it's going to probably do just about like this. And eventually it's going to be parallel to the lambda equals 3 line. And let's say we're up here somewhere, if that's where our initial condition is, well, again, we're going to do something like this. We're going to be tangential here, and then parallel out here. And so we've got a lot of, if our initial condition is up here, then it's probably going to end up looking something like that. And likewise, if we're over here, it's going to move off parallel in that direction. So ultimately, all of these curves will be either going to the left, parallel to this x1 axis, or to the right, parallel to the x1 axis. But near the equilibrium, they're going to be tangent, or very near to the this other curve, this other vector. Now I want to show you that on the computer screen. Question?
Yes, I did have one question. This might just be my intuition being wrong, but it almost feels like if t is approaching infinity, then wouldn't the ultimate slope of all solutions be parallel to the eigenvector that has the slope -1/2?
Why -1/2?
The diagonal.
No, because this is not the dominant eigenvalue. So let's think about what the solution is. So I didn't write it down, but x is equal to c1, and then 1, 0, e to the 3t, plus c2, 1, negative 2, e to the t.
Okay, yeah, I mixed up.
Now, of course, if C2 is 0, or if let's say C1 is 0 for some reason, then you will get some behaviors that go parallel to that vector. But
that would only be if your initial position was on the -1/2 line.
Yeah, I think that's true. If you're on this line, then your C1 is going to be 0. And then it'll stay there, right? It'll just keep going forever along that line. That's a good point. And likewise, if you're on this line, your C2 is going to be 0, and you're just going to always forever go horizontally along the axis. Okay, so now I want, yes.
So how does that differ from like the saddle diagrams that you were drawing in previous?
Well, the, you know, the saddle had one of the eigenvectors being negative and the other one's positive. So let's say for the same vectors, and let's make this one going out, and this one coming in. So let's say this was lambda equals negative 1, and this is lambda equals positive 3. Then you'd have this kind of behavior. Right? So, it depends on the signs of the eigenvalues. Other questions?
And if that was the case, would we still want to represent the lines going down towards the origin? Would we want to represent those as coming off of the vector the way that they are in this picture?
Yeah, it wouldn't. I'm a little sloppy here, so. And let's say that you have that's your initial condition, then you're probably going to see something like this, but it's going to go parallel that way.
It'll go parallel and won't actually ever touch.
I'm not sure because this one is always going to be forcing it down. But this one is going to dominate and take it out this way. So it might continue to go down. It won't be parallel, I think. I don't want to pronounce judgment on that. We can actually try one and see what happens.
One with opposing lambdas, right?
Yeah, this is... So if it's going inward toward the origin, then it has a negative eigenvalue. If it's going outward away from the origin, it has a positive eigenvalue. And so you only get a saddle when they differ in signs. I mean, they can have different magnitudes, but the different absolute value. But one is going to be positive, one is going to be negative.
So those actually cross the. They're like, I guess you would say, they cross the asymptote or the other one, the that one. Yeah.
These. No, they.
They don't cross.
They're tangent. I mean, if you start over here, you're going to stay over here. You're going to start here, and then
I'm in the other one, what would be the x-axis.
Well, if you have an initial condition that's close, it's going to start here, but it's going to go off like that. It's not going to cross those vectors.
So it starts from the origin.
It starts from the origin.
Different paths to the other.
Even if your initial condition is not at the origin.
Okay, I thought they were crossing.
No, this is the equilibrium point. So if it ever manages to get there somehow, it will stay there forever. And by the way, if your initial condition is here, so t equals 0 here, if you run it backwards in time, so for negative values of t, it'll end up running into the origin if it's trying to move away from the origin. Or if it's, now, if you have negative eigenvalues, both of them negative, then just reverse the direction of the arrows.
If you have a negative value of t, you mean?
No. Negative eigenvalues, everything's going to be going toward the origin.
That's what, okay, yeah.
Now, you can talk about negative t, but that's kind of an abstract.
Right.
Not just means that. Yeah, here I just want to indicate, if this is your initial condition right there, it's not at the origin, well, why does the curve go to the origin? What is the significance of that curve going to the origin? Like this one right here, let's say that's your initial condition, t equals 0 at that point. Why do I even bother to draw this part of the curve? What's going on there?
Before
t0? Yeah, it's time running backwards, or time before 0. So here, you know, you're going to start here and you're going to move out this way, but if you somehow were able to run the system backward in time, it would end up running into the origin. And in fact, any point along here could be an initial condition. So if this were your initial condition, then it's going to race out this way. If your initial condition is down here, it's going to race out this way. It'll follow the same curve. Now, if you have a different initial condition, you know, then it's going to do something like that.
It'll look like if both eigenvalues were zero. Or, sorry, were negative.
Well, then it would just run, the arrows would go back.
Would go backwards into the origin.
Yeah. Eventually, and then, you know, why would we draw these lines going out this way? Well, because that would be backwards in time. Because everything would be wanting to go that way.
And it would be everything basically falling more and more slowly into the arrows.
Yeah, because the derivative is going to get smaller, so it's asymptotically approaching the origin. Okay?
What do we label the axis?
I would call this, well, it depends in the problem, but x1, x2.
So this one would be x and y, right?
For this problem, x and y, that's right. Okay? This is all good. Good discussion. I mean, this is, the whole reason that we're doing this kind of approach as opposed to writing a second order equation is precisely because we do have the benefit of having phase portraits. And more to the, I guess that's one reason. Another reason is not all systems can be represented by a second order equation. You can take any second order equation and write it as a system, but you can't take every system and write it as a second order equation. Okay, here, I'll need to hand out a sign and sheet here. By the way, let me say, I haven't said it yet. So homework cover sheets are up here. If you haven't turned your homework in, please do so before you leave tonight. Now, okay, so does that address the quiz? We're all okay on the quiz? Okay. And you had a question on the homework. What was the question? Let me erase all this. Which section? 3.4, number 20. Yes. So dependence on a parameter? Oh, yeah. Go ahead and pass the quizzes forward, and then I'll select them. So number 20, x prime equals... ...4 alpha... What is that? 8, negative 6? X... This is number 20 in section 3.4. Is that the right problem? Okay. So let me pick up the quizzes. I have all the quizzes. Thank you. Is this all of them? Okay. Thank you. Okay. So the first thing we do is we have to write the characteristic equation. So we go 4 minus lambda alpha. I'm going to just go do the determinant. 8 and then negative 6 minus lambda. And that has to equal 0. And so you get 4 minus lambda times negative 6 minus lambda minus 8 alpha equals 0. And now already we can see that alpha equals zero is going to give us these easy lambdas. But so let's multiply this out so we get negative 24 minus 4 lambda plus 6 lambda plus lambda squared minus 8 alpha equals 0. So, write it in standard form, lambda squared plus 2 lambda, and then I guess I could say minus, and then the quantity 8 alpha plus 24 equals 0. Is that correct? What's the next step? Quadratic formula. Is that what you did? So, lambda is equal to negative b, so negative 2, plus or minus the square root of b squared, which is 4, minus 4 times 1 times c. So, but there's a minus sign here, so I'm going to turn this into a plus, and then put 8 alpha plus 24 here, all divided by 2. And I can factor out a 4, so I'm going to get lambda is equal to, if I factor out a 4, I get a square root of 4 that's coming out. The square root of 4 is 2, and that will cancel this 2. So I get a negative 1 plus or minus the square root of 1 plus 8 alpha plus 24. I can remove the parentheses because I've pulled out the 4, so I have 1 plus 1 times this, which is just 1 plus this. And so that's our lambda. Okay? Now, what's going to be a critical value for this? Well, what are we looking for? We're looking for where is lambda real? Where is it distinct or repeated? Where is lambda zero? And I would just say let's ignore the case where lambda is equal to zero, although the textbook might not do that. But we get repeated eigenvalues if and only if this 1 plus 8 alpha plus 24 is equal to 0. So 8 alpha, this is 1 plus 24 is 25, so negative 25. So alpha is equal to negative 25 over 8. And so at that point, if I've done my arithmetic right, if alpha is equal to negative 25 over 8, then you have repeated eigenvalues and they're both negative 1. Agreed? Now, if we make the thing under the radical positive, and when does that happen? So that happens if this is 1, so 8 alpha plus 25 is greater than 0, then 8 alpha is greater than negative 25, alpha is greater than, so if alpha is greater than negative 25 over 8, so here's lambda is equal to negative 1 comma negative 1. Here lambda is what? Yeah, well it's it's negative 1 plus or minus some number which is real, and so you get distinct, so real and distinct. Now one of those real numbers may be 0, but we're ignoring that for the time being. So if alpha is greater than negative 25 over 8, you get lambda is real and distinct. And if alpha is less than negative 25 over 8, then you get lambdas complex. And we can distinguish between, let's see, can we do that? No, because this negative 1 is there for all time. We can't change that because of this problem. So we're always going to have a real part to the eigenvalue. So if it's complex, if the eigenvalue is complex, then it's either going to spiral in. Well, it's going to spiral in any case, because you've got a negative real part. So does that help? And I think that pretty much characterizes it. Is that what you guys all got? Yes?
And can you clarify how you got that from the roots that could lambda be negative 1 over lambda complex?
I'm sorry, how do we get this?
Yeah, from the root.
Because if this is 0, you're going to have two lambdas, right? Because this is a second order system. What are those two eigenvalues? I mean, it's repeated because you got a plus or minus 0, so plus 0, minus 0 is another way to think of it. Does that help?
Yeah.
Other questions? Yes?
Would you use only the real part?
Well, the question is, you're given this problem, and you want to know what are the critical values for lambda. And now, in the real world, you might not ever find this kind of system, you know, for certain values of lambda, but this is a math problem. And so if lambda, alpha behaves this way, then you're going to get these behaviors for the lambda. So I'm not sure if that's answering your question.
If you were to solve the problem, how would you approach it?
I just did.
Well, we have two parts.
Which part?
One with lambda is some greater and less.
No, if alpha is greater than, it means that somebody gave you a problem here where, let's say alpha was 5. Well, that's greater than negative 25 over 8. And so if this number were 5, then you know that you're going to have real distinct eigenvalues. Now, they could be, they could both be positive, they could both be negative, they could both, you know, they could be different signs. And if we wanted to get that detailed, then we'd have to, you know, do more arithmetic. But we, in principle, we could do that if we wanted to. Yes?
Do we need to distinguish the case where alpha is equal to negative 3 as a change of behavior between a saddle point and either a source?
Well, that's okay, so that's what I was just saying. If you're trying to distinguish where one alpha is positive and one alpha is negative, then you can do that also, right? Right, because if did I say alpha? I meant lambda.
Yeah.
So your lambda is negative 1 plus or minus something. So let's say negative 1 plus if it's minus, then it's going to be negative, right? If it's plus, how plus does it have to be in order to make it positive? Well, the square root of this thing, this has to be greater than 1. So in order to make that happen, then 1 plus 8 alpha plus 24 has to be greater than 1. And if that happens, then you have one of them is plus and one of them is minus. So that would be, so 1 plus 8 alpha, so let me just write this as 8. 8 alpha plus 25 has to be greater than 1. So 8 alpha is greater than negative 24. So alpha is greater than negative 3. So if alpha is greater than negative 3, then you have a saddle. Yes?
Are you going to ask us to point that out?
I'm sorry. What?
Are you going to ask us to point that on the exam? That we're going to have a saddle?
Everything I say in class is subject to examination. Am I going to be that cruel? I don't know. I mean, it's a homework problem. Yeah, I think you should now, after we've spent this much time on this problem, you should know how to do it.
So on the test, 84% of the way. Right.
That's right, but it's not weighted very heavily. You know, if you write your name on the test paper, I'll probably still give you a zero. I'll like you still as a person. But, you know.
At least you came.
Yeah, at least you showed up. And you'll be successful at something in life, but maybe not this class. So, I don't know. No, I hope you appreciate the humor in all of this. It's, you guys, you're here, right? So you know how the game is played. And it is kind of a game. I admit that. Yes?
There's another point between where alpha, or should I say lambda, alpha is equal to -3, and you get that saddle point where you also get a no sink. You get to distinguish that as well.
Well, if alpha is equal to -3, then you have a lambda equals 0. And we just had a long discussion during office hours about that. So, I don't want to talk about lambda equals -3.
I'm not focused on the lambda equals -3. Like, for example, if lambda was equal to -24.5/8, or -51/60.
So it doesn't matter. It's still, they're different. One of them is going to be positive and one's going to be negative. They might be, you know, small, but that doesn't change the fact that it's still a saddle.
Well, there's going to be a point between the saddle and your complex value region where you're also going to have no sink.
No, it's only complex if it's less than this.
Yes, but between alpha is equal to -0.5/8 and the point alpha is equal to -3, there's a small region there where it's a sink. Where the noble sink.
Okay.
Do you want us to specify that region as well?
Well, okay, so if I actually gave this problem on a test, I would probably say find the values of alpha that distinguish between these things. Whether it looks like it's, you know, flat or whatever, you know, I mean, you could dream up all sorts of weird things in the face portrait that we might not be interested in. You're overthinking this. You know, I'll be delighted if you come up with this as the answer. Celebrating.
Happiness.
Happiness. Yes. Happiness will fill my life if all of you were able to do this. Okay? Other questions? Is that good for the homework? For this one?
Yeah, this one. Let's confuse a little bit.
Okay.
I tell you how to solve the...
Nobody's asking you to solve the differential equation.
I know, but I actually went and solved the real part in the compass.
But how do you know what it is if you don't know the exact value of alpha?
Solve it exactly with alpha.
But that's not what they're asking for in the problem.
I don't
know. All they're asking for are what are the critical values of alpha that separate the behavior into these different regions of like complex eigenvalues versus, you know, whatever. So it's I appreciate the effort, but you can't really solve the equation until you know what the value of alpha is, and that's not what this problem is asking. It's asking for the critical values of alpha that separate the behaviors. Okay, now I want to, so if we're done with the homework questions, are there any other homework questions? We can spend all the time on this, but then we won't finish what you need to learn for the exam next week. By the way, in case you forgot, there's an exam next week.
Thursday, right?
Thursday, yeah.
It's from Sunday midnight, right?
No. This exam is from 6 until 7:45. And I know what you're saying, but... okay. So, let me pull this thing down. And unmute. Okay, so going back to the quiz. Now, this is, I just pulled this off the internet today. This is kind of cute because you can enter a matrix, A11, A12, A21, A22. So the first row and the second row of your coefficient matrix. And then you can set the C1 and the C2, the arbitrary constants. And this only works for homogeneous, but it's kind of cute because you can see the vectors. So here's the 1, 0, which was the one of the vectors. The other one was, 1, negative 2, but they've drawn it over here. So you've got, they call this V1 and this V2, which is the same as this one. And so this is exactly the problem, because I've already set up the, I went ahead and clicked on this and said I want A11 to be 3, A12 to be 1, A21 to be 0, and A22 to be 1. So that's the problem that we had in the quiz. And you can see that it starts slowly, and then as time goes, it's following that curve. And that's for a particular pair C1, C2. Now, I didn't give you an initial condition, but we can play with these values a little bit, see what happens. And if you want to, you can pick an initial condition and then compute C1 and C2. So if I come down here and maybe move this a little bit. So I'm playing with C1, and you can see what's happening. It ends up moving this curve. But in all cases, you're starting from the origin and then moving out. Now, if your initial condition were here, say, then it would really start there and then move out along this curve. But it's going ahead and saying what happens if you start at the origin or very close to the origin. Now, by judiciously choosing C1 and C2, you can put this on, like I can put this on the other side. So let's say the initial condition were out here. Well, the solution would follow this curve. And you can see that in every case, this was the lambda equals 1, and this was the lambda equals 3. So it starts tangent to the lambda equals 1 vector, and then eventually if we, so we can move this out. And you can see that what's happening is eventually this is going to be parallel to the lambda equals 3 vector. So, I offer this to you. Let's see, we can even move this thing down here.
So,
yes?
Essentially, the rate of change is going from the second vector to the first.
Well, what's happening is, and I erased it, I think, but your lambda equals 1 is dominated by the lambda equals 3 term in your general solution. And so as time goes on, the e to the 3t becomes so much larger than the e to the 1t that the e to the 1t just gets forgotten. it's overwhelmed by either the 3T. And so there's a little bit of it that's, you know, it does have some influence, but as T gets larger, eventually it can't keep up. The smaller one, yes.
So this might be a dumb question, but that red line is basically every solution to that 2x2 matrix?
Well, it's every solution with the with this matrix and these values of C1 and C2. So it's a solution, it's a general solution, but you can have an initial condition anywhere along this curve, and it will still follow that same curve. And they all have to, if you're going backward in time, they all have to end up going to the origin. That's maybe the big lesson with this. We're not just starting somewhere, and if you run backward in time, you're going to eventually run into the origin. And it will do so by approaching asymptotically this smaller lambda vector. Yes.
So it's like if you're swinging a rope with like a weight at the end, in the middle, it's not going to have any. And you're saying as it goes along that line, there's an initial point, and the further along the line you go, like.
Well, if your initial conditions were here, let's say.
Yeah.
By initial, I mean t equals zero. Let's say. So you're starting here, but because you're here, you have specified some values for C1 and C2.
Okay.
And the way it works, and I'm actually speculating on this. I haven't executed proof on this, but I think if you're anywhere along this curve, you're going to have the same C1 C2 pair. And the only difference is where are you along this path, and so. Or maybe it's the ratio of the C1 and C2. I'm not sure. But anyway, let's say you're here at the initial condition, then as time moves forward, you're going to be moving along this curve. But you propagate time backwards, you're going to move toward the origin. And this is because both of the eigenvalues are positive. If both of the eigenvalues were negative, then it would be opposite. You might be starting here, but then you'd be moving. Time would be moving in this direction, and you'd be moving toward the origin instead of away from the origin. Now, if you want to experiment more, you just take a particular problem, set the components of that matrix, and if you want to play with, you know, see what happens with a spiral, see what happens with a or saddle. Some of these were just drawn by hand on the board, but now you can get detailed calculations for this. And so it's in Blackboard. It's under the course document section. Go down a couple of places, and there's a link to this. This is using Desmos. Somebody wrote this app that uses Desmos, and it's not a face portrait as such, but it does give us some information about the face portrait. Okay, any questions on this? I just wanted to bring this up. Yes.
Can we test if we had C1 is -0.8 and C2 is -0.4, and then like -0.4 and -0.2? Would it look like the same line, or would they look?
Well, I don't think the. Okay, you're challenging my my speculation. Yeah, how about you do that?
Okay.
And report back, because I don't want to take more class time on this. Okay? We're going to. Probably after in the second half of the semester, we'll do some more computer stuff. I'm a little torn about whether to use Mathematica because it's so complicated, but it also is so powerful. It gives you a lot of capabilities. And, The problem with Desmos is it doesn't have the built-in capability to solve the differential equations and stuff like that. So, or even GeoGebra or some of these other packages, they just don't have the power that Mathematica has. So we'll come back and revisit this later. Okay, so I'm going to shut this down. We still have quite a bit to cover tonight.
Did I erase something?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, no!
I wrote it down.
No, it's all right. I got it in my notes. But really, all I want to do with that example... just say a few words about it. I don't want to work the whole thing anyway. I started talking about this example last time, and this was... first of all, you cannot do row operations on A and expect to get the same eigenvalues, because eigenvalues are not preserved when you do the row operations on A. Now, once you have your lambda picked, then you can do row operations that will preserve the lambda. But by then it's kind of too late. So here, how would we get the lambdas? Well, we say 2 minus lambda, negative 4, 2, negative 4, 2 minus lambda, negative 2, 2, negative 2, negative 1 minus lambda, and then do your 3x3 determinant to get your characteristic polynomial and solve it, and what you're going to find is lambda is equal to negative 2 or 7, but the negative 2 has a multiplicity of 2, so in other words, it's negative 2, negative 2, 7. Now, are those repeated eigenvalues? Yes, they are repeated, but each one of them has its own v vector. And this is what I was going to show here. So and maybe this is going to be enough, I think, for this example. But if lambda is equal to negative 2, then you plug in, so you get negative 2, 2 minus the negative 2, you get 4. But you can do, once you plug in the lambda, then you can do row reductions. And that's what I did here. So after reducing this, we get two rows of zeros. I expect to get at least one row of zeros when we do this, because A minus lambda I, the determinant is zero. So you better get some redundancy in these equations. So it turns out nicely that you actually get two rows of zeros, and then you get this other row. And so what does this mean? Well, what are we solving for here? The V, right? So I can say 2V1 minus 2V2 plus V3 is equal to zero. And now any choice that is going to satisfy this equation will work. Now, so how would I do this problem? Well, we actually have 2 degrees of freedom here. We've got a V3 and we've got a V2 that can be varied. And so I'm going to put these guys over on the other side. So I get 2V1 is equal to 2V2 plus V3 minus V3, thank you. And now V2, so, and probably should go ahead and divide both sides by 2. So V1 is equal to V2 minus V3 over 2. Right? And then V2 is equal to V2, and V3 is equal to V3. Now, you can either work this out kind of intuitively, or if you've taken linear algebra, one thing that you can do with this is you can rewrite this as the vector V1, V2, V3 is equal to... Now, there are no constants over here. Everything depends on V2 and V3, so
Otherwise, I'd have a constant, some sort of constant vector here. But and then let me just go ahead and write. So V1 is V2 minus V3 over 2. And this is going to be V2, and this is V3. Does this make any sense?
So where did you get that V2 is equal to V2 and V3 is equal to V3?
Is that not true?
Did you just arbitrarily pick two of the variables and call
it? I picked two of the three because we have one equation, so there's 2 degrees of freedom.
Okay, I see what you're doing.
And so I'm writing V1 in terms of V2 and V3. Those can become anything. V2 can be anything. V3 can be anything. So the only thing that... So whatever V1 is going to depend on our choice for V2 and V3, but then V2 is going to be based on the choice for V2. I mean, V2 is V2. V3 is V3. I think it's hard to dispute that, right? And so all I'm doing now is copying this into a matrix form, and then I can break this out as... well, I'm going to put the V2 things in one vector. So I've got a V2 here, I've got a V2 here, and a 0 here, plus, and then the vector containing V3, so I'm going to have negative V3 over 2, 0, and V3. Agreed? Now I can rewrite this, I can factor out the V2, and I put a V2 times what? 1, 1, 0, plus, and then factor out the V3, put a V3 here, times what?
Negative
1 half, 0, 1. So now we have two V vectors. This V vector and this V vector. Now I'd probably choose to go ahead and multiply this by 2. So I get a negative 1 and a 2, and this is good enough. So V is equal to 1, 1, 0. So maybe call it V1. And then V2, big V, is equal to, I can leave it this way, or I can multiply by 2 and just make it a little simpler. So negative 1, 0, 2. And so now what's the general solution? Well, we don't know, we haven't figured out what the V is for lambda equals 7. But I'll just leave that as a dot, dot, dot. So we have X is equal to, say, C1, 1, 1, 0, E to the negative 2T, plus C2, negative 1, 0, 2, E to the negative 2t, plus T3, blah, we don't know what that is, E to the 7t. And we have to do a little bit more work to get that. And I'm just not doing it right now because I want to talk about other things. But how would we get that? Well, we plug the 7 in to our matrix of 2 minus lambda, and so on, and then solve for V. You probably want to do a row reduction. I'll tell you what the answer is. Two, negative two, one. So this becomes two, negative two, one. And if you do that, you should be able to reproduce that. Now this one is, I'll just admit, this is probably a little hard for an exam question because you have to do, it's more about row reductions and simplifying matrices. If I gave you something that's a 3x3, hopefully it would be pretty easy to work through. Any questions on this? Yeah.
Is that a 17?
17. Yeah, sorry. It's supposed to be a 17. Other questions? Okay. So that concludes our discussion of section 6.3, and now I want to talk about 6.6, which is non-homogeneous systems. And basically, we're going to do variation of parameters as our method of solution for the non-homogeneous system. Okay, so I'm erasing all of this. Now, what do I mean by a non-homogeneous system? Well, up to this point, we've mostly been focusing on problems of this type. X prime is equal to A times X. And that's what we would call a homogeneous system of differential equations. But I'm now going to add a term here, and this is we're talking about matrices here. This is the matrix, this is the matrix, this is the matrix, and this is going to be a matrix. I'm going to call it G of T. It's a matrix because it's a vector. Think of it as a column matrix. It's going to have, if it's a 2x2, it's going to have two rows. And I put a T here, it's a function of T. Usually those are like forcing functions or... otherwise, everything settles into equilibrium. So, usually this forcing function is things that keep the system bouncing around. And so the question is how to solve this. Well, if you remember from earlier, I think we did a problem or two in the homework a few weeks back where we did something called variation of parameters. And the idea there was, let me just come over here and just briefly sketch it out. So let's say you have y prime is equal to something. And in general, it would be like y prime plus p of t times y is equal to q of t. So this would be linear. Everything we did mostly is linear. At first, you solve the homogeneous system, so y prime plus p of t times y equals zero, and you get an answer. And let's call that y h for the homogeneous. And so maybe it's c e to the lambda t or something like that. And of course, depending on the value of p, it could be, it doesn't have to be an exponential, it could be something else. But variation of parameters, what that says is you're going to take this constant c and you're going to turn it into what? So in order to find the particular solution to the non-homogeneous equation, what you do is you take this c and you turn it into something which is a function of t. So you vary it. That's why we call variation of parameters. C is a parameter, so we vary it. And then e to the whatever. Or whatever this function ended up being. And then you plug this back into the differential equation. And now you solve for c of t. And under most circumstances, this will actually work. So, you'll end up getting a different answer than you did for your homogeneous, but you did it because you said that the constant, your arbitrary constant, is now going to vary with time instead of being a constant. But we're going to do the same thing over here. So,
what are these types of equations?
I'm sorry, what?
What are these types of equations called again with the UT?
Non-homogeneous. So, let me write it. Non-homogeneous differential equation. Homogeneous would be g of t is zero. Non-homogeneous means that g of t is non-zero. And so first we solve and we get the homogeneous solution. So x prime equals a times x, and we have some x h, and that's going to be the solution to the homogeneous problem. And so it's going to be I want to get the notation consistent here. Yeah, so let me write this. So C1, and then you've got some vector, and let's call this V1 e to the lambda 1 t. Plus C2 V2 e to the lambda 2 t. So this is our general solution to the homogeneous system. Now I'm going to rewrite this in what might seem like a very different way. I'm going to create a new matrix. Now the textbook uses a couple of different symbols for this matrix. In one place it uses a P, in another case it uses a uppercase phi, or what you might call it a phi, if it's uppercase. If you're into the sororities and fraternities, they'll call it phi, I believe. Anybody know about that stuff? Am I right about that? Yeah. Mathematicians and physicists and engineers would refer to it as phi, but the Greeks at the universities will refer to it as phi, and it would look like that. No, that's theta. Phi is this one, and that's what the textbook uses. But I'm going to use something else. I'm going to call it psi. This is going to mess with your pronunciation. So psi, and this is the Greek letter, is equal to, and what it's going to be, it's a matrix that has the columns that are the general solutions. So you're going to have, basically your V1 e to the lambda 1 t, and that's going to be one column, and then your V2 e to the lambda 2t is another column in this matrix. And so I'm going to give you a specific example, but I want to define this first. And then, now, if we take psi and multiply it by the vector containing c1 and c2, so if I do this, if I put, and we can call that the vector C, so let me do this. So psi times the vector C is equal to, again, the same thing. So V1 e to the lambda 1t, and that's a column, and then V2 e to the lambda 2t, and that's another column. But now we're multiplying by a vector, which is C1, C2. What I want to do is convince you that that is our solution. Now, if you haven't had linear algebra, and I think most of you have not, unfortunately, but if you have, you recognize that you can do matrix multiplication in several different ways. And one way is to take the C1 and multiply this column, and that gives you the So you'll get C1 times V1 e to the lambda 1t plus, and then C2 times this column. And so this is your x sub h, which is your homogeneous solution. And so, just summarizing, psi times c is equal to x sub h. Now, why am I going through all of this? Well, because we're going to do variation of parameters, and we're going to show that by solving this, by plugging this into the differential equation, just like we did before, we're going to vary the c, turn it into the c of t instead of just the constant c, because this c is a constant here, this vector. By varying the c and plugging it into the differential equation, this differential equation will be able to solve for the non-homogeneous solution. So that's kind of where we're headed. Let me go ahead and give you a specific example. And maybe start it over here. So x prime is equal to 3204 times x plus, and then this vector 6, and then e to the 5t. And so that's our non-homogeneous equation. That's what we want to solve for. Okay? Well, we've done a whole bunch of these. I'm just going to write down the answer for the homogeneous. So x sub h is equal to, let's see here. So C1, now, let me write it this way. So e to the 3t 0 plus C2 to e to the 4t and then e to the 4t. Now you'll recognize this. What is the v vector for this one?
1, 0.
Because I can pull this e to the 3t out. What's the v vector for this one? 2, 1. Because, again, I can pull the e to the 4t out. What are the lambdas on this?
3 and 4.
So, now why did I do this? Well, because I want to form our psi matrix. So, psi is equal to... So, this is the solution. We're not going to worry about the c inside the psi. So I'm going to put e to the 3t, 0, here, for this column. And then for this column, I'm going to put 2e to the 4t, and then e to the 4t. So the first column is this part of the general solution of the homogeneous, and this column is this part of the homogeneous solution. And so x homogeneous is equal to psi times c, where c here is c1, c2. And if you multiply c1, c2 times psi, you get exactly this equation here. Now, I know how you guys feel about this, because that's probably not how you're used to doing matrix multiplication, if you're used to matrix multiplication at all. But if you work it out, you'll see that it really does work that way. And you might want to spend a little bit of time, maybe over the weekend, verifying what I'm saying here. Don't just accept it on faith. Just go ahead and do it and see that it works. Okay, so I could work all this out, but we know how to do that. We know how to find the homogeneous solution. We've done a bunch of those. So now what I want to do is I want to show you, so I can erase most of this here, right? And we're going to continue on with solving this problem. I'll leave this equation up here because this is the problem we're trying to solve in general. Now, what I want to show you is that so psi prime is equal to A times psi. In fact, you can think of that as a theorem, if you like. We know that x prime is equal to A times x. That's our original equation. And so I'm going to go ahead and remember x is equal to psi times c. And so let's plug this into this equation. So if you take the derivative, now by the way, these are constants. So this is easy. So if we take x prime, what is that?
Psi.
Well, it's psi prime times c. And now a times x is equal to A times what? Psi C. And so we plug in to the differential equation, we get psi prime C is equal to A psi C. Agreed? And so the C's cancel, and we get psi prime is equal to A psi, which is what I said before. Now this is going to help us as we're solving this problem. So this is the first thing to conclude. Now, go a little further. We're going to assume that x, and I could write n for non-homogeneous, but I'm just going to let x equal, assume that x is our final solution that we're looking for, is equal to, and we're going to vary the parameter. So we're going to, instead of having psi times c, we're going to have psi times c of t. And we're going to plug this into the differential equation, right? This is the variation of parameters. This is that tricky step that I said we can do. So now if we differentiate, x prime is equal to, well, now this is a product of two functions that are both functions of time, so we need the product rule. So first times the derivative of the second plus the second times the derivative of the first. So we get psi prime times c. Here, c is assumed to be a function of time. And x prime is equal to this thing now. So we're going to plug in x is psi c of t, or psi c, but c is now a function of t. So we get x prime is equal to a times psi c plus g. I'm not going to write the of t because that just clutters up the notation. But x prime is also equal to this thing over here, which is psi c prime plus psi prime c. Now we have also the result from before, which is that we know what psi prime is. So wherever I see a psi prime, I'm going to replace that with an a psi. So we get psi c prime plus a psi c, the c here, equals a psi c plus g. What can be canceled?
A psi C.
A psi C goes away from both sides. So we end up with psi C prime is equal to G. And G is given and psi is given because we know the solution to the homogeneous. In fact, over here, we know exactly what psi is. And so now all we need to do is solve this equation for C prime. And then once we have C prime, then we can integrate to get C. And we'll have our answer. So that's what I'm going to do now. Any questions up to this point? I know I went through this fairly quickly, but if you write these steps down and take them home and work them out, you'll see that this is true. And this is what we want. If you're working the problem on the test, you want to probably know this, but you definitely need to know this, because this is the equation that you're going to solve in order to figure out what C prime is. And once you have C prime, then you can get C by integration. So let's take this specific example here. So let me write down, so the psi doesn't have to be changed, so I'm just going to write this. So psi, I'm sorry?
What is G? What is G?
Like G? What happened to G?
Like,
what is G?
Yeah, how did it pop in?
It's in the original problem. The thing that makes this equation non-homogeneous is this G.
So that's also G of T.
Yeah, it's the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said I'm not going to always write the of T because we know what G is. It's a function of T. Okay, so now I'm going to write psi. So e to the 3t 0. 2e to the 4t, e to the 4t, and now I'm going to write c, so c1 prime and c2 prime. Now, these c's are not the same as these c's, right? These are constants. These c's are functions of time. That's why I can prime them, why I can differentiate with respect to time. So, now, that is equal to G. And in this particular problem, what is G? What did I write down over here? It's 6 and e to the 5t. So 6e to the 5t. Now, you guys have never seen anything like this in your life, most likely, unless you've taken this course before. And so, how do we solve this equation? Well, there are a couple of ways, but I would use Cramer's rule. If you remember from all of your matrix stuff that you did back in a previous life somewhere. So C1 prime, and I'm just going to write it down, and you're going to dutifully write it in your notes, and then you're going to learn Cramer's rule. So C1 prime is equal to, what we do is we take this matrix and replace the first column with this column, and then divide by the, actually it's the determinant of that. So it's the 6e to the 5t, 2e to the 4t, e to the 4t, that's upstairs. Downstairs is the determinant of this matrix. So e to the 3t, 0, 2e to the 4t, e to the 4t. And believe it or not, that is the answer. This is what Cramer's rule says. When you have a problem like this, matrix times vector equals vector, to find this, if this, these are unknowns, you take this and you replace the first column of this matrix with this vector, leave this second column alone, you take its determinant, and then you divide by the determinant of the original matrix. And you're like, why can't we do that for all 2x2 systems? Well, you can. It turns out that Cramer's rule is not very efficient, but in a problem like this, it's really the only way to do it. And so let's calculate these determinants. Remember, it's this times this minus this times this. So this is equal to 6e to the 4t minus 2e to the what?
9t.
9t. Divide by, And then this determinant, it's this minus this times this, but this is a zero, so it's just e to the 7t equals. So you get 6e to the negative 3t minus 2e to the 2t, and that's what C1 prime is. And we can easily integrate that. So we get C1 is equal to, so multiply both sides by dt and integrate, and what you get is 6 divided by negative 3, which is negative 2, e to the negative 3t, minus e to the 2t, plus k, call it k1. I need something other than c here.
What was that last step?
K1?
Yeah,
integrate?
No, like, how do you get from 16 to negative 3 to minus 2 to c to that c1 to
equal to
k1?
You gotta know your calculus too.
I don't know, but I was wondering, like, what you do.
6 divided by negative 3.
So you can integrate.
Yeah, I'm integrating. Yeah, because this was c1 prime and this is c1. Yeah, sorry about that. It's integrating. Okay, now let's do C2 prime. So C2 prime is equal to the determinant of this matrix, but with replacing this column with this column, so we get e to the 3t 0, 6 e to the 5t, divide by, now this determinant doesn't change, so I can just throw in the e to the 7t here. Because that's the determinant of this matrix. And equals, so e to the 8t minus 0, divided by e to the 7t.
Did I do that right? Doesn't feel right. Yep, it is right.
E to the t. Okay, so this is e to the t. That's right. So c2 is equal to e to the t plus k2. Now I'm going to erase all of this over here because I need the board space. Can I do that? Are you guys following what I'm doing here? You've got to accept on faith at the moment about the Cramer's rule. Yeah, go home, look it up. It used to be everybody solved it this way. Yes?
When you were E7, that means the matrix is the same as this.
Well, the way Cramer's rule works is both of these are going to be solved with the same denominator. So it's the determinant of this matrix here and here, but this is equal to e to the 7t. Okay? We good? I'm erasing all this. Because we're almost there. So now what we do, so the remember that the final solution is equal to psi times this varied c, which we figured out, right? So actually, let me write the psi again. I need that. E to the 3t 0, 2e to the 4t, e to the 4t, and then times what we got. So 6, where did I go? Here it is. Okay, so negative 2e to the negative 3t minus e to the 2t plus k1. And the other one is e to the t plus k2. Now, I'm going to share a little trick with you. If you make K1 and K2 equal to 0, or let me put it this way, we'll do it non-zero first. If you just leave K1 and K2 unspecified, what you end up with is exactly the original solution, which is psi C, where C is replaced with K1, K2. So you get both out of this process if you leave K1 and K2 unspecified. But to make life a little easier, I'm going to set K1 and K2 equal to 0. So set K1 equal to K2 equal to 0, and that will give us the non-homogeneous part, which we then add to our homogeneous part. And so we multiply, so we get XH, which is your homogeneous part, is equal to, and now we go, so e to the 3t times this with the k1 equals 0. So you get negative 2, and e to the 3t times e to the negative 3t is 1. So you just get negative 2 here, minus e to the 3t times e to the 2t is e to the 5t. Plus 2 e to the what? 5t. And in this K2 is 0. So that's the first row. Second row, 0 times this plus e to the 4t times this, which is just e to the 5t. And simplify, we get negative 2. So minus e to the 5t plus 2 e to the 5t is plus e to the 5t. And here is e to the 5t. And so our final solution, x, is equal to xh plus x. I'm sorry, this is not h. Call it n for the non-homogeneous. So xh plus xn. So what was xh? It's all this, right? Or if you like, you can just leave it as psi C, the original C.
It's a negative 2 there.
Oh, okay. I think this becomes a constant because it's e to the 3t times e to the negative 3t.
Yeah, I just transferred it. Okay.
Plus, and then this matrix here. So negative 2 e... I'm sorry, negative 2 plus e to the 5t, and then second row, e to the 5t. So this psi c is what we had down there for our solution. So this is the final solution of your non-homogeneous system. Now, if you have initial conditions, then you can match those and figure out what your C's are. Okay? Now we're out of time. Question?
How did you get X? What is X?
That's this thing right here.
Well, what is that?
That's multiplying those two matrices.
Okay, so that's a non-homogeneous part.
Yeah. Okay? I know it's a lot. You're not going to be able to figure out it from the book. So hopefully you took notes. So remember, we've got a test next week. We'll talk about the test on Tuesday. The homework for next week is 3, 5, 6, 3, and 6, 6. And we'll circle back and get 6, 2, and 6, 4. Next time, sometime soon. Okay? See you guys. Have a good weekend.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Just
This next week we did 6 senses.
Yes, that was 6-6.
This will be on the exam.